And we move to the second case for today, Mendenhall v. Mueller Streamline.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Counsel, good morning. You know, this case comes up on appeal from the decision of Judge O'Mara, a visiting judge from Michigan who tried this case for the first 2 days of the trial. And on the first day of the first thing in the morning of the second day of the trial, he entered an order dismissing the hostile work environment component of a case as a reading of the summary judgment.
Mr. Arakura, you told Judge O'Mara that you believed that Mr. Mendenhall had already established a prima facie case of retaliation at the time he stopped the trial. Did you have other evidence of retaliation that you would have presented if the trial had not been cut short? And if you did, what would it have been?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Mr. Mendenhall had not even testified. The vast majority of his witnesses had not testified. The only witness who had had her full testimony was Ms. Jones, who's the manager of the company, and she's an adverse witness. We would have shown that Mr. Mendenhall repeatedly complained about nigger signs. We would have shown that Mr. Mendenhall was working much faster than the other people. All the material we've been able to put out there and show that Mr. Mendenhall was not the slowest worker, all the material we're able to use to show that the narratives for his discharge were completely different, all the materials we were able to put out there to show that at the time of Mr. Mendenhall's discharge, Ms. Jones was citing previous disciplinary actions that were not relevant.
So only Ms. Jones had testified?
Yes, and everything we got was based on what we got from her, not Mr. Mendenhall or any of his witnesses. Now, there's absolutely no question about the hostile work environment component of this claim. So at least there's no question that plaintiff and defendant do agree that the hostile work environment could exist sufficiently and independent of the race discrimination component of the claim. It's amazing that this would happen in this circuit where we have the Cirrus technology case, which is the controlling authority, extremely similar to this case, where the race discrimination component was dismissed at summary judgment and the hostile work environment continued to trial.
If now, you wanted to take an interlocutory appeal from the district court on the hostile work environment claim, why didn't you file a Rule 59E motion explaining that to the judge after he granted Mueller judgment as a matter of law?
Well, Your Honor, the record is very clear about how extensive the conversation we had, and we discussed this.
It's so funny how all of you lawyers think the record is very clear in all of your cases, and we have clouds above our heads up here. Yeah.
I apologize, Your Honor, for the use of the language.
No.
But the last call in this case was the district judge agreeing that Mr. Mendenhall was entitled to an interlocutory appeal.
Now, the only kind of interlocutory appeal, it seems to me, that could have been imagined was a 1292B certification. It's hard for me to see how this fits under 54B. Did anybody ever think about what that might have been?
Well, yes, Your Honor, I did, and you're correct, because what that says is there's just no way to advance any other components of the case based on the ruling, because some evidence would be excluded.
Yeah.
And what the judge said, his last word was, I agree with you. You should be entitled to it. I would do the work of a district court judge. I would put you on your way to your interlocutory appeal. There was a motion right before the judge when we recessed and came back.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what your opponents have argued, and I'm sure you're prepared to address this, is that, in fact, I would say at a minimum, you acquiesced to the abandonment of the interlocutory appeal avenue and acquiesced in the notion that, that this was all the evidence you were going to have, and if that indeed was all the evidence you were going to have, then judgment as a matter of law was appropriate.
No, we did not acquiesce, because I said to the judge, said, whatever words you want to put around this to rest your case. And I said, Your Honor, I don't see how standing here, whatever I say translates to rest it.
But nowhere did I see judge, or and tell me if I'm wrong, judge, only Miss Jones has testified. What about, you know, hearing from Mr. Mendenhall? What about hearing from all of his witnesses? What about?
Yes, Your Honor, it's right there when I said to him that I am here, we have not presented our witnesses, I'm ready to continue to try this case.
You said we have not presented our witnesses.
It's right there. I said we're ready to continue to try the case. We have,
yeah, I think that's
but
right.
The practical effect of your ruling is that I cannot even elicit the evidence.
But you never said, for instance, that let me explain what our evidence would be.
I did, Your Honor. And we had some conversation about how I could even put up my case. He said that most of the evidence that we were trying to get out appeared to be pretext. And I said, well, this is how I think I want to do the case. And he said, no, you cannot do it that way. On one occasion, I specifically said, I will be examining my witnesses about the legal signs that were written all over this place. And I would be cross-examining the defense witnesses about that. And he said, you can't. I won't let you. Because what had happened was he was trying to exclude or determine the parameters within which this trial was going to be conducted.
So you were trying to complain simultaneously with these very restrictive rulings that he was making and at the same time saying, but you'll still go forward with whatever's left?
He wanted us to go forward with the retaliation. And when we came back, I said, well, Your Honor, I'm going to need to put this kind of evidence which is relevant to the retaliation. There were nigger signs written all over the place here. Says, no, that has to do with race discrimination. I said, Your Honor, he complained about that. And we have that right there in the transcript where I said, Mr. Mendenhall complained about that.
What page are you looking at?
I'm looking at the defendant's appendix, page 158. That would be the supplemental appendix 158. But that will be transcript
of the defendant's?
Page 219. Yes. And what had happened was counsel to the defendant had asked the judge about the nature of certain pieces of evidence that he thought would become irrelevant in the context of his ruling. And I said to the judge, starting from line 16, Your Honor, if I may ask, if defendants intend not to cross-examine the witnesses regarding the graffiti, I will. I intend to exhaustively question, put my witnesses and defendants' witnesses about the derogatory graffiti.
But
line 21, the court says, you may not do so.
Forgive me, but am I missing something? You said only Miss Jones had testified.
Yes.
Here at page 158, it says, Mr. Schwartz, for example, Your Honor, and I don't necessarily disagree, but for example, we didn't quite finish yesterday with Mr. Peart's direct examination. A lot of it was about the graffiti.
Yes, Your Honor, what I meant was that only Ms. Jones' testimony had been concluded. We had just about started the direct of Mr. Peart, and we were going to continue it the next day. And the judge did say that he didn't know the rest of the testimony of Mr. Peart, but he did say that I'm not even sure much of what Mr. Peart has to say is going to be relevant. And we had had a whole day, the previous day, of all kinds of rulings about the nature of the testimony we were trying to get out in this case. And here you have a judge saying that I'm not even sure the vast majority of the rest of Mr. Peart's testimony is going to be relevant at all.
Let me ask you this. In terms of understanding your argument, I just want to know, are you essentially saying that these evidentiary rulings of the district court about what could come in, what could not come in because of things being relevant to these other claims so restricted your ability that when the court ruled as a matter of law, it was based on, as it were, the wrong evidentiary record?
It was based on definitely the wrong evidentiary record in the sense that one of the issues here is that he had excluded relevant evidence. and also wrong in the sense that he did not even have all the evidence we prepared to try this case with based on the summary judgment ruling of Judge Kokoras. There was no way to say that there's judgment as a matter of law when we had not presented our full case to the jury. Okay. And our position is, even with the limited evidence that we got in, we believe that we have crossed the threshold for establishing retaliation. I would yield the rest of my time to rebuttal if you...
Sure.
Thank you, Counsel. Ms. Schaefer-Ramsey?
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Amy Ramsey. I represent Mueller Streamline Company.
Before you even begin, I'm going to ask you if you concede that Judge O'Mara was wrong to conclude that Mendenhall's hostile work environment claim couldn't exist independent from his race discrimination claim.
I was certainly hoping to find some case law to support his position, but I wasn't able to do so.
Because it certainly in this circuit
wrong.
Doesn't exist. That's the problem. I mean, your judgment rests on, at best, a foundation of sand. Now, whether it falls down because of that is, I suppose, what we're here. But when Judge O'Mara, as you quite properly put on page 13 of your own brief, makes that statement, he is completely wrong as a matter of law, and that seems to have influenced what evidence he was allowing to come in. And of course, as you know, if the problem is what the package of evidence was, then we don't give a judgment the same sort of deference we would give if there were no evidentiary complaint about it.
What happened after Judge O'Mara made his ruling on harassment is that plaintiff's counsel just stopped. There was a viable claim left, which was retaliation, a claim that he could have put evidence on.
But, you know, I read the transcript not so crisply. You know, it looks to me like there's a lot of confusion because this was so out of left field and people were groping toward how to solve that problem. And then all of a sudden the judge comes in and says, I'm going to assume that you have rested your case. Actually, Mr. Irukara never actually says, I've rested my case. The judge just kind of says, I'm assuming this, and I'm making this ruling, and he just cuts off the trial. If it were clear, you know, maybe waiver principles or maybe something else, although certainly even if people sometimes say, okay, it's over with, and I'm going to take my appeal, and I'm going to make my argument that this judgment rested on an error of law. There's nothing wrong with that. It happens all the time. So, I mean, at worst, I think that's what Mr. Irukara did, but I don't find, I find a very confusing exchange where it looks like all parties concerned were not sure what was going on.
There was a lengthy exchange, but it concluded with Judge O'Mara reiterating that the plaintiff had two choices. He could take the interlocutory appeal, which was the plaintiff's first notion when he suggested it, or he could do as Judge O'Mara suggested, which is, in keeping with plaintiff's claim that he couldn't go forward, rest his case, and the entire matter would go up on appeal as a matter of right.
But you see, in some ways, so what? I mean, first of all, actually, I'm not at all sure that this court would have accepted a 1292B
right.
on this kind of circumstance. It seems to me to be way outside the margins of what we look for in 1292B. So at one level, the failure to take an interlocutory appeal might be a harmless error, if you will. Once Judge O'Mara has said that a great chunk of the evidence is not admissible or not admissible for the purpose stated, we wind up with this appeal anyway, which rests on this error of law that you've conceded took place.
The issue that I'm arguing is with respect to the retaliation, and it's defendant's contention that he could have and should have gone forward with the retaliation claim.
But how could he? Because you've also at the same time said that a great deal of the evidence on the retaliation claim wasn't pertinent, and I would remind you that the way this court at least handles review after a full trial is not in terms of the summary judgment, prima facie case, rebuttal, production, pretext, and so on. We basically say, have you proved your case? We don't pick it apart in terms of you know, the stone against Indianapolis factors or whatever. We look at the ultimate question, and so I'm not at all sure that given what had been ruled out of order, he could have proceeded.
Well, I'd like to make sure the court is aware that it was stipulated that Mr. Mendenhall had complained about graffiti, had complained about discrimination. So he didn't need to put further evidence on the record about the graffiti to demonstrate that he complained about it. We had stipulated to that.
Right, but retaliation. So you concede that he can go forward with his hostile work environment claim? Is it my understanding you correctly? Because you just said you're here to talk about retaliation.
That's correct, as Judge Rovner inquired.
So you concede
earlier
that we at least need to remand on hostile work environment.
I certainly wasn't able to find any support for Judge O'Meara's okay hostile environment ruling.
We don't know why he revisited that in the middle of trial, do we?
No.
I mean, as it is in
the judge
the
opened the second day of trial by saying he had a sleepless night. He looked at Judge Kokoris's memorandum opinion and was going to make a ruling of law on harassment.
Yeah. Basically, I guess what I'm asking is there wasn't a in chambers that we're not aware of.
No, and certainly no motion from either of the parties.
Mm-hmm. So it was totally sua sponte.
Yes, and again, he concluded after this dialogue about which alternative the plaintiff might choose by saying, you can let me know whether you want interlocutory appeal or whether you're resting your case. And again, plaintiff could have gone
forward. But that doesn't sound like he was saying, or you're going forward. It sounds like he was telling him interlocutory appeal or rest.
Well, the plaintiff was very firm in his decision to not proceed with his case.
Where do you see firmness in what Mr. Irokira just quoted from your appendix on page 158?
Well,
168, sorry.
Right away he says, I can't go forward. I can only go forward if I'm allowed to put in all the evidence I had intended to put in. So it's on actually page 172, I think. I'm sorry, Mueller Supplemental Appendix 173. We're unable to continue because of the portions of the case that you believe cannot continue. So that's really what our position is.
He says, I'm more than happy to continue my case, but it's impracticable. I don't know if there's going to be a ruling. I believe we've established it. Just kind of keeps going back and forth. And then he finally concludes by saying, I can only say that I'm more than happy to continue to prosecute my case within my understanding of the law. Where do you get not continue out of that?
It's my understanding that Mr. Iacara was either going to put on the full case as he had planned with harassment or nothing at all.
Why did you see it? Where do you see that? Where he says, I can only say that I'm more than happy to continue to prosecute my case within my understanding of the law and what the summary judgment ruling was.
Right. And previous to that, he said, it's not practicable for me to go forward because of the limits you've put on the case. He's declining to continue with the retaliation portion.
How would he have continued?
With the retaliation portion, he could have put on witnesses to testify about the circumstances of his termination and his suspension. Those are the things that he claims were retaliatory. They're quite distinct from the parts of his harassment claim, which are graffiti and name-calling.
So you believe that there was plenty of evidence he could have put on, even given the constraints placed on him by the district judge?
That's absolutely right. We were prepared to change our trial plan just as plaintiff would have had to, and it would have consisted of not asking the questions that went directly and only to the harassment portion.
But how can part of the retaliation claim ultimately, and again, getting away from prima facie cases and all the rest of it, is to show that the negative event that happened to you is for the retaliatory reason. It's the link between the two. And without the ability to put in the evidence showing how these things might have been linked to the protected activity and to his underlying complaints, I mean, you have a nice situation for your client. He can never win. But he needs to be able to show that link.
Again, we had stipulated to the protected activity.
You stipulated that he complained, but not. But it's the motivation. It's
not to the fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the fact that he complained, but you know, the plaintiff was put in an untenable position of not being able to put on evidence he needed. You know, you're trying it to a jury, right?
Correct.
And a stipulation that, well, we stipulate he complained about graffiti and so forth. Really doesn't do a lot, does it, for a jury?
Well, it's not the most exciting way to get the information, but it was at least there. again, it's finally the defendant's position that he could have gone forward, he should have gone forward. He decided he was too limited by Judge O'Meara's decision.
And he preserved his right to take this appeal. I mean, that's where I keep coming back. You know, it's not that he conceded that no legal error had been made on either the retaliation or the evidentiary rulings or anything else. It's just at some point it is, in fact, proper practice to acquiesce to what the judge has ruled and take your luck with the next level court.
And before deciding he wasn't going forward, he did claim that he established the prima facie case of retaliation, which we also contend he was unable to do.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time? You have 5 minutes, Mr. Yarkarow.
Thank you. Thank you. First, the facts are not that cut and clear as the defendants would want you to believe. In their brief, unfortunately I haven't been able to find that while sitting out there, they specifically state that the reason why they don't believe the retaliation could have gone on anyway was also based on Judge Kokoras's ruling, because the facts are so intricately and inescapably intertwined with the facts that established the race discrimination claim. And we're talking about the same facts that Judge O'Meara has said, I'm not going to let you present. There was a motion eliminating number 6 here, where they sought to limit the amount of evidence that came in. They said, well, we don't want this information to come in, because they went to prove the race discrimination. The same Judge O'Meara ruled that those pieces of evidence were relevant to the extent of establishing that there was a pattern of hostility in the workplace, or that there was something that Mr. Mendenhall had engaged in that caused him to be retaliated against. Now, he's come now to say that you cannot present a hostile work environment, you cannot present any evidence that supports the hostile work environment.
You're talking about around page 40 or so of their brief, where they're talking about Judge Pecoris's ruling in the context of a retaliation case. As I read it, they're saying the logical implication of the points that Judge Kokoris found as to which there was no genuine issue of fact also dooms the retaliation case, even though apparently Judge Kokoris didn't realize that at the time he made the ruling.
That
I'm just trying to understand. I believe that that's the argument that they're making.
Well, and that argument must fail, because first they filed a motion for summary judgment. And that's the motion that Judge Kokoris ruled on. If these facts were before Judge Kokoris and he didn't rule on it, I mean, Judge Kokoris' summary judgment memorandum opinion, it's several pages. And he cut this into several portions. He had the hostile work environment separate. He has the race discrimination separate. And he analyzed each and every one of them. And he had authorities from this circuit in each and every one of them. So this argument is being presented to this court for the very first time. And so, for that reason, the argument must fail. The only argument they had against the retaliation was that he did not check the retaliation box at that time. Now, even if this argument must be listened to, the whole conduct we're talking about are part of the issues that constitute this pattern of hostile work environment. Repeated disciplines when they were not warranted. And you're saying that he cannot bring that up. The several times he saw the language nigger on the walls. And that's what he was talking about. He raised this with his manager. He repeatedly complained to her. She got upset about it. That is retaliation. That is evidence that supports the retaliation claim. And I specifically like I read to the court a few moments ago, said to Judge O'Meara that I intend to question the witnesses about this portion of the claim. And his answer was, no, you may not. After that, I tried to explain to the court why I planned on questioning the witnesses along those lines. And I said to him, I believe he complained several complaints about the graffiti. And that would be, he felt it was a racial issue and he was complaining about it. Other people saw it and complained about it. And the court went on and said, I would complain about it too. And I guess what I was trying to establish to the judge was, even aside from the hostile work environment, if we can get beyond your argument that the hostile work environment doesn't even survive, this same conduct would still be admissible evidence to establish retaliation. And that's what he was saying, that I will not let you raise any testimony about that.
In your last minute, could you please just very quickly summarize for me the acts which were the retaliatory acts, termination, suspension?
Yeah, no, the discharge was retaliatory.
Discharge.
The suspension was retaliatory. Ms. Jones indicates that she investigated if he made this threatening gesture at other employees. Mr. Peart was right next to him. He was riding with Mr. Peart. Mr. Peart said he never told that to Ms. Jones because Ms. Jones never asked him what kind of investigation was that. That is something the jury needed to hear to determine the credibility of Ms. Jones.
Had Mr. Peart testified to that?
Yes, he said he never told Ms. Jones what he saw, but he did testify
that. So the judge did hear that?
The judge heard that. He heard that Mr. Peart was standing next to Mr. Mendenhall, but because the whole evidence didn't come out in the case, we never had the opportunity to connect these dots at some point. Also, the discharge, there were two narratives for his discharge. The two narratives are completely inconsistent. Mr. Mendenhall never got the opportunity to come and testify as to the conditions under which he left, the conditions under which he got those narratives. He never had that opportunity.
But the jury did hear from Ms. Jones that there were two different...
The jury heard that from Ms. Jones. And what was interesting is that the jury did send a note to the judge saying, why do we have these two narratives? We don't understand why this is the case. So this case was half-gone. They would have understood that by the time we would have completed the presentation of our case. And that would have shown that Ms. Jones was not a credible witness.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.